The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome to the show. It is Thursday, September 19th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, including right here. I'm feeling a little weird today, but I hope you'll forgive me. Having a good time here at Rolla J Studios. Today, we've got all sorts of highlights from the fantastic Boston Freedom Rally, a bunch of short little videos that we're going to play normally where the radical rant section would go. So you can check that out at the end of the show. Little cameos by all sorts of really cool people, including Keith Strop, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, the hash-making legend Mila from the Netherlands. Cheryl Schumann showed up. I mean, lots and lots of people to check out. Jody Emery. So that's coming up at the end of the show. Also on today's show, it's all about cops say legalized drugs. So at half past, we've got James Doherty from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He's a former prosecutor from Seattle, Washington. He's going to tell us why I-502 in Seattle and legalization have gone the right way as far as he's concerned. And kind of a double shot for Leap today. In the Behind the Headlines segment, I'm going to give you the Boston Freedom Rally speech, the opening speech of Boston Freedom Rally from Leap's Jack Cole, one of the founders of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. So that'll be right after our 420 radio news. And in the 420 radio news today, another tie into the Boston Freedom Rally, we got to meet up with N.A. Poe and Chris Goldstein from the Panic Hour and Philly Normal, respectively. They are holding the 9th Smokedown Prohibition Rally at Independence Park there, where the Liberty Bell is displayed. It's federal property. They got all sorts of trouble they're facing because they've been smoking joints on federal property. We've also got exclusive from edroper.com some Freedom of Information Act requests that tell us just how much money, how much of your taxpayer money is being spent to harass people in their free speech rights, smoking a joint there at the Liberty Bell to protest federal marijuana prohibition. You won't be surprised by how much it cost and how much of a waste it is. So all that's coming up on today's Russ Belville Show. And for Groovin' Thursday today, Bago Schwago's got the day off because I've got more Boston Freedom Rally video. And unfortunately, I don't know the name of the band. We're going to have to try to tease that out of the video when we watch it. It also features Mass Can Normal's Kara Crab Burnham closing the second day of the Freedom Rally. And more videos coming up tomorrow as well. Stick around. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. Voice of the marijuana nation.
Here we go. One big push.
Big push.
And congratulations. It's a teenager.
Huh. Don't even think about going to Kevin's.
It takes one powerful mother to have a teen. Learn how to keep yours safe and stay sane at drugfree.org.
This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, September 19, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Feds warn of serious penalties on eve of ninth pot rally at Independence Hall, from Philly.com. Marijuana activists this weekend will rally for the ninth time since last December at Independence Mall in what is referred to as smoke down prohibition protests. One of the organizers, Richard Tamaccio, a comedian who goes by the stage name N.A. Poe, faces sentencing on Tuesday in federal court. Two more organizers, Chris Goldstein and Don DeZam, were cited for possession of marijuana at the last smoke down prohibition protest August 31st, their second pot bust at the protests. Federal prosecutors are not allowing Goldstein and DeZam to pay a fine like they did for their first citation. Instead, both are required to appear before a federal judge. A date for a preliminary hearing has not yet been set. Assistant U.S. Attorney Richard Goldberg declined to comment, but a spokeswoman for the U.S. attorney said the federal government is not taking smoking pot on federal property lightly. Goldberg recommended stringent probation terms in the filing for N.A. Poe, including banning him from entering Independence National Historic Park in connection with any meeting, gathering, or demonstration unless approved by a probation officer, banning him from associating with any others arrested for pot possession at marijuana events in the park or organizers of such events, and no further arrests during his probationary period. The High Cost of the Freedom Cage, from edroper.com. The monthly smoke down prohibition events have been happening in Philadelphia. Hosted by Philly Normal and the comedy group The Panic Hour, they have evolved into an ongoing regular act of mass marijuana civil disobedience, only steps away from the Liberty Bell. Starting in early 2013, the first four occurred without incident. No arrests were made or citations handed out by park police. However, on May 18th, the National Park Service decided to start kicking up enforcement actions and multiple arrests were made. In April 2013, the last smokedown event held without police interaction, the cost of overtime for the National Park Service police totaled $1,522. The very next month, when National Park Service police decided to start making arrests, costs increased to $5,350 worth of overtime. On June 30th, 2013, the Park Service decided, for reasons unknown, to dramatically up their presence and brought in even more police, some dressed in full riot gear. On this date, the cost of overtime combined with travel expenses shot up to an astounding $21,563. These are the costs for just one of the agencies present. National Park Service, from the fines, earned roughly $1,700. Only 10 citations were made at the event, some of which have since been thrown out. State court, medical necessity okay reason for pot, from the Columbian. Washington's Supreme Court says defendants busted for marijuana charges can argue they needed it for medical reasons, even if they failed to follow the requirements of the state's medical marijuana law. In a 5-4 opinion Thursday, the justices said voters did not get rid of the medical necessity defense when they passed the medical pot law in 1998. Justice Barbara Madsen wrote for the majority that people who fail to follow the medical law can nevertheless argue in court that they needed the marijuana for medical reasons. But in order to do so, they must also show that complying with the medical marijuana law was not a viable alternative for them. One toke, many hits. Exercise could trigger additional high for marijuana users, from Time magazine. The study published in the Drug and Alcohol Dependence found that levels of THC, marijuana's active ingredient, were higher by an average of 15% immediately after users exercised. And that could be enough to trigger a positive blood test and suggest that users got high more recently than they actually did. Although it's been known for years that THC is stored in fat and can sometimes cause positive tests weeks after a person has last smoked it, the study is the first to document that exercise can lead to a rise in its levels in the blood. Changes in THC levels after exercise, which ranged from 0% to 34%, increased with body fat. The study's lead author, Ian McGregor, said, quote, "People with larger BMI showed a bigger increase and very thin people had no effect," end quote. The rise was short-lived, lasting for less than 2 hours. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, September 19th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we have footage from the Boston Freedom Rally and the inaugural speech from Jack Cole from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, opening up the Boston Freedom Rally's first day. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
Man, is that the Reaper Man?
That's the Reaper Man.
I believe he's losing his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
This is a Russ Belville Show news alert. Whatever you do, don't smoke pot. You don't want to turn out to be a loser, like Olympian Michael Phelps, actor Jack Nicholson, singer Miley Cyrus,
rocket scientist Dr. Carl Sagan, pop star Rihanna, actress Cameron Diaz, country legend Willie Nelson, President Barack Obama, Cy Young pitcher Ken Lincecum.
Oh, have you ever met that funny Reaper Man? Have you ever met that funny Reaper Man? If he says he swam to China, and he tells you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that Reaper Man.
And over 100 million other Americans.
Have you ever met funny Reaper Man?
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Behind the Headlines segment. And today, we open it up for Jack Cole from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Thank you. My name is Jack Cole. I'm a retired New Jersey State police officer, detective lieutenant, 26 years in that organization, 14 years undercover in narcotics. And let me tell you something. In that entire 26 years, nothing I did out there reduced the number of people abusing drugs by so much as one person. The war on drugs is not only a failure, it is a self-perpetuating, constantly expanding policy disaster. So when I retired, I felt very bad about my role in implementing this failed war on drugs. I sat down with four other police officers and we created this organization, LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And the idea of LEAP is we want to correct all the wrongs that we've been doing for 43 years of the drug war. So what we're calling for is this: legalize and regulate all drugs. Legalize them, take them out of the hands of the criminals, and end the violence. Then when we regulate those drugs, we can end overdose deaths. In my 14 years undercover on the streets, I can tell you, nobody dies of an overdose of drugs because they shoot more and more dope. They die because they don't know how much of that tiny little package of powder they're buying is really the drug and how much is the cutting agent. In an illegal market, they will never know what's in that package. When we regulate the drugs, we can prevent half of all potential cases of AIDS and hepatitis C. Because according to the Centers for Disease Control in this country, they tell us that 50% of all new cases can be traced directly back to intravenous drug users sharing needles. If those drugs were legal, they wouldn't need to do that. And once we start treating drug abuse as a health problem, which is what it is, folks, not a crime problem, we can actually stop sacrificing our young people to arrests for nonviolent drug offenses, which we're doing to the tune of 1.7 million per year. And almost 50% of those arrests are for marijuana offenses. So we've made a lot of progress in 12 years since we've been around. When we first came, nobody in the United States was talking about legalizing any drugs. Now last year, last November, we have two states that have legalized marijuana, even for recreational purposes. So we're on our way. This last week, Senator Leahy had a judicial committee hearing where he talked about legalizing these drugs and getting the federal agents out of enforcing their laws in states where they've passed this. Things are going our way. They're going our way very quickly, and they should go our way. Let me just give you a quick idea of what has happened in the 43 years we've been fighting the war on drugs. First, they said that if we fight this war hard enough, we will have less drugs in our community. Well, let me tell you, when I was a young cop kicking in doors, seizing hard drugs, we measured our largest seizures in pounds, our largest. Today, we measure our largest seizures in tons. That's 2,000 times the problems we had in 1970. 15 tons actually, of methamphetamine, one seizure. 20 tons of cocaine, one seizure. 23 tons of heroin, one seizure. And believe it or not, 242 tons of marijuana, one seizure. And let me tell you something. After those humongous seizures were made, it didn't change the price of drugs on the street by so much as one penny. And that night, nobody went to sleep without their drug of choice. This war on drugs is doing nothing. Purity level. They say the purity level will go down if we fight the war. When I was a young cop buying heroin, that heroin was analyzed, and what was called heroin, the powder was coming in at 1.5% pure. Today, DEA tells us the purity level on street level heroin is 60% pure. That's a problem 40 times greater than it was at the beginning of the war. DEA also tells us that at the beginning of the war, we had about 4 million people in this country above the age of 12 who had used an illegal drug. That was 2% of that population. Today, DEA tells us we have 121 million people in this country who used an illegal drug. Folks, that's 43% of this population. We went from 2% to 43% under a war on drugs. It's hard to imagine any policy that could be worse. Heroin overdose deaths have increased 9 times their size since we started the war on drugs. So by every single measurement, this is a failed policy. We have to end it. The organization that can do the best about ending this is LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Today we have over 100,000 police, judges, prosecutors, prison officials, and we have supporters in 120 countries. Folks, we've even got 4 former drug czars of their countries, including the European Union, who sit on our board of directors. We will change this. We have the credibility to change this. But to do it, we need all your help. There's people out there in that audience around you right now wearing these LEAP t-shirts, and each one of them is carrying one of these sign-up sheets. If you put your name, your email, and your zip code on it, you get on our newsletter, and when we get 1 million private citizens who say they agree with us, we'll go to Washington and change this. And not only don't we ask you for money to do that, we'll actually give you one of these LEAP badges to take with you. Thanks very much. Have a good weekend.
That's great. Speech there from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Jack Cole, one of the founders of LEAP, speaking on the opening speech of Freedom Rally. All right, time for us to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have some Daily Toker tunes for you, more Freedom Rally stuff. I'm sorry I've forgotten the name of the band or didn't ever get it, I don't think, but we'll see it together.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
It's quite simple. I'm a very nasty drunk. I get mean. I get loud. I'll tell your deepest, darkest secrets to a stranger. And I'll puke on your shoes. So, if that's the kind of behavior that this culture promotes, you know, fuck it.
Your one-room schoolhouse of choice. Your one-stop freedom shop. It's the Libra Lounge.
Sundays at 3, right here on 420radio.org.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, one of the fun things about the Freedom Rally, or interesting, I should say, was on Sunday we could only go till 3 p.m., but that didn't stop us from celebrating 420. You'll hear Kara Crab Burnham at the end of this video closing out, and in the meantime, you get to see what it was like approaching the main stage.
American eyes, view the world from American eyes, bury the past, rob us blind. not to be high. Americanized, do the work from Americanized. Bury the past, rob a crime.
Rather your kids talk to about drugs? You? Or some guy? When your kids find out you've been lying to them about marijuana, who will they trust? Let's have a rational discussion about drug reform. Let's tax and regulate marijuana, restrict youth access, and create safer communities.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everyone. Half past the hour, and we are visiting today with James Doherty. He's a former chief prosecutor in Seattle, Washington. James, welcome to the show. Oh, excuse me, James. I didn't get your microphone turned on. Let's try that again. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, my fault. Sorry about that. And James, I'm really excited to talk to you today because, of course, you know, the two states that passed marijuana legalization, Washington and Colorado, have been in the news quite a bit lately. And you were there before that all happened. And maybe you can give us an idea why Seattle was so progressive and how it was able to get legalization passed in that state.
Well, I think probably the people here in Washington are, particularly in the western side of the state, in the Seattle area, are fairly progressive. And we had a very, very good coordinator of the initiative campaign at the American Civil Liberties Union. And they drafted a very comprehensive ordinance initiative that really met the needs of a lot of people and the concerns of a lot of people. So I think it was the right place, but also it was the right people putting the whole package together and getting it to the voters.
Now, according to your biography, you were a chief prosecutor and also a corrections officer, as well as a public defender. So it sounds to me like you've gotten a lot of breadth here of experience. And what did that experience teach you about prohibition and the need to end it?
Well, I saw the system grind up a lot of people in ways that weren't productive. Marijuana was being treated so seriously, and certainly some people use marijuana to excess, and maybe they have some problems in their life if they've really spend all the time smoking. But it's not a danger to the public in the way that alcohol or many other activities are a danger to the public. And yet it was being handled so seriously and taking up so much time within the courts, filling up the jails, and ruining people's lives. So I saw it at multiple levels, and it just didn't make any sense.
So did your viewpoint on wanting to support an end to the drug war accrete slowly? Did this come about through time, or was there a particular moment where, snap, you just went, oh, this is not making any sense anymore?
Well, I knew it didn't make any sense, and I had just gotten, like many people, just used to the fact that that's the way it is. We've got all these insane laws that, you know, treat it too harshly. And actually, I heard a speech by Jack Cole, one of the founders of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and he just made so much sense, and he laid out the facts and the waste of taxpayer money and the impact on the communities. And after his presentation, I went up and I say, hey, I want to join. I want to help you in any way that I can. And then for the last about 8 years, I've been a speaker for LEAP. And I've enjoyed being part of the process of bringing about this change.
You know, we've spoken with you now, and you mentioned Jack Cole. We've spoken with Norm Stamper, Pete Holmes. It seems a lot of people involved in law enforcement and the municipal operations of the city, the government there, have a very progressive and enlightened view on marijuana. And I imagine a lot of that owes to being in the Western Washington, kind of a liberal Seattle area. But how much of that also owes to the culture of law enforcement there? Has there been what makes the Seattle area cops different than, say, Topeka, Kansas?
You know, I don't know that the law enforcement people, the rank-and-file law enforcement officers, were any different. I think that we just had some very good people in influential positions step forward and say, hey, we need to rethink this. And because they were leaders, either politicians or attorneys, people in the community that had some stature, people paid attention, you know, and I think they got more credence than some of the people who were just viewed as, you know, long-haired dope smokers that just wanted to be left alone and didn't want to be prosecuted. The message was really being put out as a statement that, hey, our society can do better on this. We don't need to waste the money. We don't need to ruin people's lives. We can regulate it and hopefully do a better job of keeping it away from minors, and we can tax it. and use that money for drug treatment and for studies to deal with drug issues in our society.
We're speaking with James Doherty, a former chief prosecutor who's a speaker now for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And, you know, in speaking to a lot of LEAP officers, we hear they had some sort of epiphany. They felt that there was some moment that, you know, for example, Neil Franklin talks about his partner getting shot and how that kind of led him to this understanding the drug war wasn't working. Has there been any personal impact of the drug war in your life? Someone you know, some friends, family, perhaps, who've been impacted by this?
Boy, I'd say, you know, as a public defender, I had a lot of clients who were impacted by the war on drugs, and not just marijuana, other drugs also. And it had a horrendous impact on their lives, particularly those that got a conviction. And it made it hard for them to turn things around in terms of, you know, maybe they were young and they did some things that they shouldn't have done. But then trying to get back on track is very, very difficult when you can't get college loans. You've got a conviction on your record and it's hard getting a job. So I saw just in a lot of instances people that were unfortunately unduly impacted by drug use that wasn't, in many cases, hurting other people, but in turn ended up hurting them a lot.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the big controversies over the passage of I-502 in the last election to legalize marijuana possession is twofold. One is that it did not include a right to grow your own plants. And then probably the most contentious issue was over the 5 nanogram per milliliter DUI, the per se DUI. You've been a prosecutor. You've been a public defender. What do you think about this 5 nanogram per se DUI limit? Is it appropriate? Does it need to be worked on? What would you do with it?
You know, I'm not an expert on it. I certainly heard a lot of the controversy about it. Some of the articles I've read recently lead me to believe that maybe it's not too bad of a level. I certainly don't want people to be seriously impacted. People that are seriously under the influence and their reaction times impacted, I don't want them on the road, just the same as I don't want people that are under the influence of alcohol. But I honestly don't know. I don't have the experience and the scientific ability to deal with this, to make a decision of what's best. But I think there are going to be a lot of studies around the country now that will do some very good measurements so that we can understand at what level someone is impaired and what's the best way to test for that and what's the timing. How quickly does marijuana move out of your system? And, you know, we understand alcohol so much better in terms of driving impact than we do marijuana. So I think we're going to learn a lot in the next 10 years, particularly as all of the states start looking at this more seriously.
Seattle, of course, has the famous Seattle Hemp Fest that's been going on for over 2 decades with, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in the park. And I get the opportunity to speak to some police officers there sometimes who will, you know, always pretty much to a man and woman say that they'd much rather work the Hemp Fest than, say, a Seahawks game at Quest Field where beer is openly consumed. Do you think that large rallies like the Hemp Fest that are alcohol free but pot focused have a positive impact on the community and negative impact on legalization? What do you think of rallies like the Hemp Fest?
Well, you know, technically it is against the law here in Washington, as it's currently written, to smoke marijuana in public, in plain view, public view. But I think it is nice for people to realize that a lot of people can sit around and smoke dope and it doesn't lead to violence. But I think a lot of people understand that already. I mean, people certainly are aware from even back at Woodstock that you can get, you know, 250,000 people or more together and smoking marijuana and it doesn't lead to chaos. The rain might lead to chaos concert, but not the marijuana. So I think that it's been good for the community to realize that this festival has been going on for, you know, almost 20 years, but there haven't been any serious altercations due to marijuana use at the festival.
One last question, James. We've reported on the memo that came out, the August 29th memo about federal priorities. How much faith do you put in that with respect to rolling out Washington State's legal recreational marijuana markets?
Well, you know, it appears that the federal agencies and the prosecutors are going to watch how things unroll here and in Colorado. I think that our initiative and the regulations being adopted by the state agency, the Liquor Control Board, meet the concerns expressed by the Department of Justice. So I think as long as things continue to proceed in a very regulated, tight system, I think the feds are going to stay in the background and they're just going to watch and see how this plays out. And hopefully it will set a good precedent for other states that want to move in the same direction.
That's excellent, excellent opinion there. And thank you so much, James Doherty from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We appreciate all of you there. Visit leap.cc for more information. James, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana. Less harmful than alcohol, and time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
This is crack, rock cocaine. It isn't glamorous or cool or kid stuff. It's the most addictive kind of cocaine, and it can kill you. What's really bad is nobody knows how much it takes. So every time you use it, you risk dying. It isn't worth it. Look, everybody wants to be cool, but doing it with crack isn't just wrong. Could be dead wrong.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
Beautiful Boston Common, founded 1634, the birthplace of American democracy, where we are just about getting ready for the Boston Freedom Rally. You can see the tents all setting up behind us, and we've got an injunction to be able to have the rally. The city of Boston tried to shut this down, saying they didn't have enough police, but we fought them, and the directors of MassCan Normal went to court, got an injunction, so we're on today. Here Saturday at noon to 6, and then Sunday, tomorrow, noon to 3:30, allegedly. But we're going to stand up for our First Amendment rights. We're going to stay for the whole day and smoke out Boston Common at 4:20 on Sunday as well. So plenty coming up here at the Boston Freedom Rally. Thanks for joining us here, our 4:20 radio coverage of the Boston Freedom Rally, live from Boston Common. Not an event unless Osh is here. How you doing, Osh?
Same old.
You have any idea how many miles you put on that van this year?
65,000.
65,000. How many events?
All of them.
All of them. I know, everyone I'm at, you've been at.
Not the ones at the West Coast, but yeah, like Seattle and...
Yes, it is.
It's been a long, strange trip.
Yeah, 65,000 miles this year. Is that typical year? I mean, what do you do in a typical year?
That's a little excessive.
Well, much?
I've been coast to coast four times.
Are you headed to Denver for the DPA conference?
Yes, I'll be at Denver.
All right.
I live in Colorado, so
that makes it pretty. Yeah,
it's like a hometown across the street thing.
Right on. Well, we'll see you there.
That'll be fun.
We're here with Mr. Boy, who stopped here to say hi to me. Hello, Mr. Boy.
Hey, how you doing?
You gotta give him your line again that you just said.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my name is John Boy, B-O-Y. Very strange last name. So, I have three daughters. They're all boys. They date men, but they're not gay. And my ex-wife was a boy named Sue.
There you have it, folks. A
now,
boy
is
named
that gonna
Sue.
Go, is that going to go viral?
Yes, it will go viral. If I give you my card, you can look that up on the internet.
There you go, baby.
Elijah High, I want to get high.
Puff Pass Rec, want to get high.
That's the one. That's what I'm doing today at 420. What's going on?
Oh, man, which stage? Main stage?
Main stage at 420.
Fantastic.
I'll be there, man. Cut. Listen, come back. We're going to interview. We're going to talk. Smoke it up. Have a good time.
We will.
Cannabis education. We are the first cannabis college in New England. Learn how to make extracts. Learn how to make butter. Use coconut oil. First Cannabis College in Massachusetts. We opened up 2 days after the vote. We're on our ninth semester. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. Is there a website for people?
There is, grassroot420.com.
Grassroot420.com.
Yes.
Thanks for spreading the
information. We teach everything about cannabis education, from politics, history, science, the endocannabinoid system, everything.
All right.
Totally,
thank you so
nothing
much.
Anecdotal.
Right on.
Thank you very much. Cannabis College.
We are
not backstage. We are understage. Understage in the Kanebo stage with
Sharon.
And we could lose all the progress we've made in a day.
We are taking advantage of some of our VIP perks.
Namely, freedom.
Hey, red, white,
and
blue. Nice.
We're so close.
So Libra was going to speak, but now she's not going to speak.
Yeah, because I guess I missed it because they said that I wasn't here. Because apparently in the speaker tent they don't notice you.
I guess not. Oh well.
All that nerves for nothing. Oh well. Time to get over that.
Sharon's speaking after me. And I'm speaking like at 4:05 here, which will be 4:20 or 4:30. Who knows what it'll be. But we'll head over to the main stage. We're going to be catching a bunch of more groups, including the band Tree, coming up pretty soon, so stay tuned.
Here we're backstage at the, what did they call this, the gazebo stage?
The bandstand.
The bandstand. Right. So it's like about 11. We're about an hour before starting the official Freedom Rally. Hanging out here with some Mascan volunteers who asked me if I wanted to get high.
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yes, it's as rhetorical as it gets. My answer is always yes. You guys want to be on camera? I don't know. Okay. All right. Yes. Here we are. So.
Oh wait, I gotta stop picking my nose.
Yeah, no picking your nose. All right. So 24th annual Freedom Rally.
Right on.
Give me a good time.
Yeah. Power to the people.
Tough, rolling it up. So introduce yourself.
Bill Bones. Billy B.
Billy Downing.
We got, is it three bills?
It's three bills.
We're in here.
This is Freedom Rally. I gotta tell you, this is about the only time I ever have three bills.
One in the wallet, one in the mailbox.
Right on. Yeah. So here we are, and what I like about this is that we're sitting here rolling weed, and right over there, it's the man. It's the popo.
Austin's fine.
There they are.
Yep.
It's as fine as it gets in Boston, right there.
Yeah. Now, since people out in TV or radio land don't know it, the fact is that those are Boston police. And their only function here really is to bust people.
Yeah.
We have other cops that are here. They're called Park Rangers, Boston Park Rangers. And we hire those guys instead. And they don't arrest people. And they don't hassle people over pot. And the city wants to force us to use Boston Police Services and pay for it.
Of course.
We have never done so before. And unfortunately, this court case that we got yesterday was settled by us offering to pay them $2,000.
Gotta have the payoff, huh?
It's extortion.
It's graft.
Yes. Well, they keep trying to shut this down. It's like, what, the fourth time they've tried to shut it down, something
That's
like that?
Correct, indeed, yes. And they failed every time.
Pesky First Amendment.
God damn those rights.
Damn freedom.
All right, Radical Russ here, backstage at the main stage at the Boston Freedom Rally, day two. And we've got an interesting situation brewing here on day two, and that is the city of Boston did not want to give permits for either day, but most specifically, they didn't want to give a permit for day two. This is the first time they've had a day two. So there was kind of a compromise that was made where instead of going Saturday noon to 8 and Sunday noon to 6, they had to cut off 2 hours on Saturday, that is, just go noon to 6, and then they had to cut off 3 hours on Sunday today and only go noon to 3. So we're going noon to 3 today, and therefore the cops apparently are all gathering and starting to give a lot of problems here at the Freedom Rally. Now, it is decriminalized here in Massachusetts, but you can get a $100 ticket for smoking. Now, luckily, these fine people here don't really care. They are choking up a nice big, nice big one there. Looks like a big one. So that's the smell of freedom. But they've got apparently undercover cops going through the crowd trying to entrap people into buying weed. So make sure you're not selling to anyone. And enjoy the Freedom Rally. We'll see what happens. We'll get the cameras running at 3. What's going to happen then? The power will be cut off. There's a few bands that are going to stick around and do some acoustic sets. And N.A. Poe and Chris Goldstein are basically going to be doing a Smoke Down Boston, which is like their Smoke Down Philadelphia rallies. They start them at 3 and they run them till 4:20. And so that's what we're going to do here. We're going to be gathering people here on the common, smoking out, and going from 3 o'clock until 4:20. So there will definitely be some civil disobedience here today at the Boston Common. For 420 Radio, I'm Radical Russ. Stick around. I'm speaking next. So, well, we'll get film of that. See you later.
Thank you very much, everybody. We are the third best rock and roll band from Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Hell yeah.
We're coming up to join us. Look at this banana over here. He's got some CDs in his pocket. If you want to buy them for $5, it's all cool. So find a banana, buy a CD.
Thank you, writing me down.
All right. I put a pen right next to my screen.
Oh yeah, what do we got going on here?
Although I didn't take it to make that one
for 420 Radio.
I got a whole bunch of tie dyes. I made them too. $5 over there. Oh, that's good. Over there?
Oh
suddenly they're turning around. It's like,
here we are, day two
of
the Boston Freedom Rally, and go walking by, and look who's here. But Keith Straub and Rick Cusick and Dr. Lester and Mila. So, you know, it's a charmed life. Tough gig, but somebody's got to do it.
Fuck the G-Rod, I want the machines that are making them. I target strength with the run from the ballpark to all the kings at the west side of the dog. Come on. Come on. Hey, Jeff. Can't wait to take when that knife breaks the hurt. Yeah, it's a rig, I'm moving with your fit. Can you see a freedom burn? Can't wait the day, but the night brings the hurt. What now they got me rolling down Rodeo when I shot them. People they see the plan, get man, cause they grand every fly one. Y'all hear me?
And I'm walking across the Boston Common when I find what we in the West call a smoking circle. I don't know what y'all call it. But smoke session?
Yes.
Right on. So you guys come to the rally all the time? You looking forward to a good time?
No, it's my first time.
First rally?
Yes, sir.
Y'all locals, right?
Nah.
Where are you from?
Attleboro.
Yeah?
One of the biggest pothead towns there is.
I don't know.
Nobody out from out of state, though, right?
Oh, no,
that's
pretty bad, too.
Out of state. Well, there you go. That's some of our coverage of the Boston Freedom Rally. We had a good time, and coming up on tomorrow's show, we will have even more coverage. I'm going to bring you some of the speeches that took place after the 3 o'clock high. We took to the gazebo and then to Mount Mary Jane, and just at the top of our voice and then using some bullhorns, did some good old-fashioned stump speeches. It was one of my favorite activism events ever. We've got Rick Cusick and Chris Goldstein. We got one of my own speeches, kind of the amalgam of two of my speeches, the ones I call the iceberg speech and the amendment speech. So we get to see that tomorrow as well. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
Fun, fun.